All right, so today is our second Sunday in our series. Let's see if we can get this thing to work. Called Heavy. Well, that sounds like a downer. And I need a little bit of help this morning. Nate, will you come help me? Ronald Sr., will you come help me real quick? Just come stand by me, Nate. Okay, just hold out your right hand. Okay, now Ron, come over here. Right hand. Okay, now just hold your arm straight out. Straight out. Now last Sunday we talked a little bit about how the longer you hold something, the heavier it gets. If you want to, you could try just take your cell phone out of your pocket and hold it straight out. You might not be getting any reception anyway, so it's as good as a brick in here. You hold that thing straight out. The longer you hold something, the heavier it gets, right? Who do you think will last the longest? No one wants to venture. Is that getting any heavier?
Yes.
Yes? Yeah. Okay, you can put it down. That's fine. So the longer you hold something, the longer you carry something, the heavier it gets. And the reality is that like it or not, believe it or not, you are created a spiritual being. Like it or not, believe it or not, you're born in sin. You didn't do anything to deserve it. That comes from Adam and Eve. You can thank them later. You're born in sin, but you were not created, you were not designed to carry sin. You go back to Genesis and look at the origin story. When God created us, He did not create us to carry sin. So one of the reasons that life can be uncomfortable, difficult, gut-wrenching at times is because we may be carrying something that you're not designed to carry. Are you with me? We can be carrying something that we're not designed to carry. Now, I want to go to the Bible. This is City Bible Church. So if you don't have a Bible, we have some extras right here that have been donated that we'd be happy to give to you. If you please just lift your hand real quick. Seriously, we have extras right here. If you don't have a Bible, please feel free to ask for one. Anyone? Yeah, feel free. Don't feel awkward. We're all together. Okay. And we are going to start in 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel chapter 11. I'm glad to see that some of you don't have the Bible memorized yet and you brought one with you. That's always a help. So you go Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, 2 Samuel. Just kidding. I got page number 257. I don't know what it is for you. 2 Samuel chapter 11. Are you there? Okay. So we're going to look at a story today of someone who was carrying something that they're not designed to carry. 2 Samuel chapter 11. I'm going to read from the New Living today because it's a little bit easier to understand. In the spring of the year, when kings normally go out to war, David sent Joab and the Israelite army to fight the Ammonites. They destroyed the Ammonite army and laid siege to the city of Rabbah. However, David stayed behind in Jerusalem. Late one afternoon, after his midday rest, David got out of bed and was walking on the roof of the palace. As he looked out over the city, he noticed a woman of unusual beauty taking a bath. He sent someone to find out who she was, and he was told she is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Then David sent messengers to get her, and when she came to the palace, he slept with her. She had just completed the purification rites after having her menstrual period, then she returned home. Later, when Bathsheba discovered that she was pregnant, she sent David a message saying, "I'm pregnant." Then David sent word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." So Joab sent him to David. When Uriah arrived, David asked him how Joab and the army were getting along and how the war was progressing. Then he told Uriah, "Go on home and relax. David even sent a gift to Uriah after he had left the palace. But Uriah didn't go home. He slept that night at the palace entrance with the king's palace guard. When David heard that Uriah had not gone home, he summoned him and asked, "What's the matter? Why didn't you go home last night after being away for so long?" Uriah replied, "The ark and the armies of Israel and Judah are living in tents, and Joab and my master's men are camping in the open fields. How could I go home to wine and dine and sleep with my wife? I swear that I would never do such a thing." "Well, stay here today," David told him, "and tomorrow you may return to the army." So Uriah stayed in Jerusalem that day and the next. Then David invited him to dinner and got him drunk. But even then, he couldn't get Uriah to go home to his wife. Again, he slept at the palace entrance with the king's palace guard. So the next morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and gave it to Uriah to deliver. The letter instructed Joab, "Station Uriah at the front lines where the battle is fiercest. Then pull back so he will be killed." So Joab assigned Uriah to a spot close to the city wall where he knew the enemy's strongest men were fighting. And when the enemy soldiers came out of the city to fight, Uriah the Hittite was killed along with several other Israelite soldiers. Then Joab sent a battle report to David. He told his messenger, "Report all the news of the battle to the king, but he might get angry and ask, 'Why did the troops go so close to the city? Didn't they know there would be shooting from the walls? Wasn't Abimelech, son of Gideon, killed at Tebez by a woman who threw a millstone down on him from the wall? Why would you get so close to the wall? Then tell him Uriah the Hittite was killed too.'" So the messenger went to Jerusalem and gave a complete report to David. "The enemy came out against us in the open fields," he said. "And as we chased them back to the city gate, the archers on the wall shot arrows at us. Some of the king's men were killed, including Uriah the Hittite." "Well, tell Joab not to be discouraged," David said. "The sword devours this one today and that one tomorrow. Fight harder next time and conquer the city." When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. When the period of mourning was over, David sent for her and brought her to the palace, and she became one of his wives. Then she gave birth to a son, but the Lord was displeased with what David had done. So the Lord sent Nathan the prophet to tell David this story. "There were two men in a certain town. One was rich and one was poor. The rich man owned a great many sheep and cattle. The poor man owned nothing but one little lamb he had bought. He raised that little lamb. It grew up with his children. It ate from the man's own table and drank from his cup. He cuddled it in his arms like a baby daughter. One day, a guest arrived at the home of the rich man, but instead of killing an animal from his own flock or herd, he took the poor man's lamb and killed it and prepared it for his guest. David was furious. As surely as the Lord lives, he vowed, any man who would do such a thing deserves to die. He must repay four lambs to the poor man for the one he stole and for having no pity. Then Nathan said to David, 'You are that man. The Lord, the God of Israel, says, I anointed you king of Israel, saved you from the power of Saul. I gave you your master's house and his wives and the kingdoms of Israel and Judah. And if that had not been enough, I would have given you much, much more. Why then have you despised the word of the Lord and done this horrible deed? For you have murdered Uriah the Hittite with the sword of the Ammonites and stolen his wife. From this time on, your family will live by the sword because you despised me by taking Uriah's wife to be your own. This is what the Lord says. Because of what you have done, I will cause your own household to rebel against you. I will give your wives to another man before your very eyes, and he will go to bed with them in public view. You did it secretly, but I will make this happen to you openly in the sight of all Israel." Then David confessed to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." Nathan replied, "Yes, but the Lord has forgiven you, and you won't die for this sin. Nevertheless, because you have shown utter contempt for the Lord by doing this, your child will die." After Nathan returned to his home, the Lord sent a deadly illness to the child of David and Uriah's wife. David begged God to spare the child. He went without food and lay all night on the bare ground. The elders of his household pleaded with him to get up and eat with them, but he refused. Then on the seventh day, the child died. David's advisors were afraid to tell him. He wouldn't listen to reason while the child was ill. They said, "What drastic thing will he do when we tell him the child is dead?" When David saw them whispering, he realized what had happened. "Is the child dead?" he asked. "Yes," they replied, "he is dead." Then David got up from the ground, washed himself, put on lotions, and changed his clothes. He went to the tabernacle and worshiped the Lord. After that, he returned to the palace and was served food and ate. His advisors were amazed. "We don't understand you," they told him. "While the child was still living, you wept and refused to eat. But now that the child is dead, you've stopped your mourning and are eating again." David replied, "I fasted and wept while the child was alive, for I said, 'Perhaps the Lord will be gracious to me and let the child live.' But why should I fast when he is dead? Can I bring him back again? I will go to him one day, but he cannot return to me." Then David comforted Bathsheba, his wife, and slept with her. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son. They named him Solomon. The Lord loved the child and sent word through Nathan the prophet that they should name him Jedidiah, which means beloved of the Lord, as the Lord commanded. Now turn with me, please, to Psalm 51. Psalm 51. Psalm 51, for the choir director, a psalm of David regarding the time Nathan the prophet came to him after David had committed adultery with Bathsheba. Have mercy on me, O God, because of your unfailing love. Because of your great compassion, blot out the stains of my sin. Wash me clean from my guilt, purify me from my sin. For I recognize my rebellion. It haunts me day and night. Against you and you alone have I sinned. I've done what is evil in your sight. You will be proved right in what you say, and your judgment against me is just. For I was born a sinner, yes, from the moment my mother conceived me. But you desire honesty from the womb, teaching me wisdom even there. Purify me from my sins, and I will be clean. Wash me, and I will be whiter than snow. Oh, give me back my joy again. You have broken me. Now let me rejoice. Don't keep looking at my sins. Remove the stain of my guilt. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a loyal spirit within me. Do not banish me from your presence, and don't take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and make me willing to obey you. Then I will teach your ways to rebels, and they will return to you. Forgive me for shedding blood, O God who saves. Then I will joyfully sing of your forgiveness. Unseal my lips, O Lord, that my mouth may praise you. You do not desire a sacrifice, or I would offer one. You do not want a burnt offering. The sacrifice you desire is a broken spirit. You will not reject a broken and repentant heart, O Lord. Look with favor on Zion and help her. Rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Then you will be pleased with sacrifices and offered sacrifices offered in the right spirit, with burnt offerings and whole burnt offerings. Then bulls will again be sacrificed on your altar. Wow. Sadly, because Sunday mornings have become more and more of a spectator event, we tend to not look at big chunks of the Bible and actually read whole stories. I don't like that. I think we should. Most of you have been over to our house, and you know that our house has a secret. Our secret is that our bathroom on the main floor has a toilet that has an issue. It has a secret sin, if you will. It decides sometimes to not flush. Well, I have good news. It's fixed. We had a, and I'm embarrassed at how long it took me to do this, but we had a plumber out, and they used this thing some people call a snake or an auger to try to find out what on God's green earth could be down in a toilet. Had to actually remove the toilet, flip it upside down, try from that end as well. And finally, we hear this, and out pops this corner piece of PVC. Now, someone at one point had given us these little soccer goals that you put together with little pipes with nets. And, you know, soccer is the best game in the world, football being the best spectator sport. But that thing was stuck down in there, and I'm telling you, nothing solid would go down. It was our house's secret sin. Everyone in this room is not perfect. There's not a one of you. Paul writes to the believers in Rome, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. You know, we like to say in this church, there's no perfect people allowed and nobody walks alone. We all have sin, right? Every one of us. Even if you don't believe it. I've gotten a lot out of reading the Bible through a year. This past Saturday was my turn to read Philippians, which was great. It was really meaningful to me. But there are a couple of verses that are relevant to this that came up just through the pattern of reading one proverb a day. Proverbs and Psalms are kind of like the fast food section of the Bible. You can read one proverb for every date of the month with the corresponding date of the month. And I thought it was interesting, some of the passages that are relevant to our topic this morning. Proverbs 14, verse 9 says, "Fools make fun of guilt, but the godly acknowledge it and seek reconciliation." You know, last week we talked about how you can be spiritually blind and not aware of your guilt. Here's another one, Proverbs 15 and verse 11. "Even death and destruction," he's using the Hebrew hell word there, "hold no secrets from the Lord. How much more does he know the human heart?" You know, Jesus talked a lot about our heart, what's going on the inside of our heart. He talked a lot about how there is sin that you can commit in your heart that is the same as if you did it. Hello? Here's another one, Proverbs 16 and verse 2. "People may be pure in their own eyes, but the Lord examines their motives." 16 and verse 6. "Unfailing love and faithfulness make atonement for sin." Now he's using the words that describe God's love. God's love never fails us, never leaves us short, right? I'm still short, but you know what I mean. "The unfailing love and faithfulness make atonement," mean make your sin right. Not just, okay, I'm fine, I move on. But make it right. And look at this follow-up thought here still, Proverbs 16:6. "By fearing the Lord, people avoid evil." Now, you may recall we talked about how the best translation of fear God, in the many times that phrase is used in the Bible, is meaning a constant awareness of God's presence. If I'm constantly aware that God is with me, I can grow up into integrity. Ben, what's these $20 words today? Integrity. What does integrity mean? Integrity means I am who I am in front of you and in private. Integrity means I do what I say I'm going to do in front of you and in private. Are you with me? Secret sin is not good for you. Now, God gives us a way out. Let's talk about that a little bit. How did David know to ask God for forgiveness? Well, let me give you just kind of some short, quick history, okay? David's grandfather is Obed. And I don't know any Bible scholars here going to go on Jeff Foxworthy's game show. Who was Obed's parents? Obed, David's grandfather, his mom was Rahab. Who was Rahab? Rahab was not Israelite. She was not Jewish. If you look in Matthew chapter 1, Rahab is in the genealogy of Jesus. Do you know that if God created the world and waited literally hundreds of years to bring his son into the world, and he chose a human, right, the Virgin Mary, for Jesus to be conceived inside of, he could have chosen any genealogy he wanted. Do you know that God chose a genealogy that showed his forgiveness? Yeah. You know the genealogy of David, of Jesus, goes through David and Solomon? A bastard child? Come on, let's not blink at the truth of the Bible. David knew to ask for forgiveness because he already knew that he was a half-breed. Hello? Because not only was great-grandma not Israelite, she was that woman. She was a working woman. She was a woman whose house was known as a place you go to pay for sex. She's in the genealogy of Jesus. God provided her, really cool story, a way out. Do you know who else is right there? Ruth. You know that Ruth's marriage that produces Rahab, the marriage that is in that line, that genealogy of Jesus in Matthew 1, is her second marriage? That's not the kind of purity that the Israelites were hoping for. I don't mean any disrespect, I'm just being honest, right? You have people of other ethnicities, people that were forgiven, that were brought in.